Well, thank you very much for this opportunity to talk to you about Martha. I've always been interested in Martha. She's always associated with Mary, and Mary seems to get this
limelight.
She seems to get the limelight. Yes, it's very interesting. And so I was really keen to talk about Martha. And I think you'll find as I talk about her that I've obviously got a soft spot for her and maybe think I'm a bit more like her than Mary. And so that's why it makes it of interest to me. Anyway, I've had some lessons in a slideshow, had Joe Chabon told me about the little connection thing, and then Julie's had me set it up, and then as I'm setting it up, I don't know if you noticed that I lost my first slide by just inadvertently flicking my finger on the wrong thing. And so then it all goes into panic mode, and then I've got very tiny little writing. The rest of it, I think the writing's okay. So let's just start by just I'm going to calm down now, I think, because I know I can talk, okay? Okay, well, yes, yeah, so Martha, I've always found her an interesting character, although there's not much written about her. Mary and Martha are mentioned in each of the four gospel narratives, and they live in Bethany with their brother Lazarus. And we all know the story of Lazarus, but there's even less information about Lazarus than there is about Mary and Martha, which is interesting, about the type of person they are, I mean. Now, Bethany was quite close to Jerusalem. It could be thought of as an outlying suburb, even. It was only 2 kilometres from the centre of the city. And there's no mention of fathers or husbands in this household. And that's very unusual for women to be unmarried in the Bible, because Jewish women usually got married by the age of about 16 or 18, something like that. It's possible that these women, the sisters, were young orphaned women, maybe, who hadn't got married yet, or older widows who were not yet married, remarried. But there's another possibility, and it's that Mary and Martha belonged to an ascetic Jewish sect, and maybe they chose singleness and celibacy. It's believed that a colony of ascetics, perhaps the Essenes, lived in Bethany at the time. There's some evidence in that in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's not a very strong one. I think I found reference to it in a couple of the references that I checked. But this reference in the Dead Sea Scrolls suggests that there was a hospice in Bethany for the ritually unclean, which included lepers. And so when people came to Jerusalem and to celebrate the Passover, whatever they were coming for, these people could stay there and sort of be part of it, but not involved in the actual ceremonial stuff. These people were known for their charitable deeds, and it was likely that the hospice there helped and accommodated the poor and the destitute as well. And it's interesting, Jesus may have been at this hospice, this place where help was offered, when he said, "For you have always the poor with you, but you do not always have me." And we'll be reading that. That's part of this Mary and Martha story. But it's only, it's been suggested. But Martha is often, but not always, mentioned first, so she was probably the eldest. And compared to the sisters, as I said, Lazarus has a more passive role in the Gospel, so he may have been considerably younger, so his death may have been even more lamentable, or I'm wondering whether he was ill, not a well person. And then another idea came to me, maybe he was a kind of a stepbrother. And maybe because it seems as if Martha was the mistress of the home. And that's sort of interesting that he wasn't the one. Anyway, but for the woman to own the home was not common, but not unknown. And you sort of wonder if she inherited it, from someone in the family, or if it was if she was a widow, whether she inherited that way. It seems as if Martha was the more practical of the sisters. That comes out very strongly. And Mary the more introverted and emotional. And Mary may have even been the more popular, and it was interesting to see your, when I mentioned the difference of how you all sort of thought maybe she was more likeable or more acceptable or something like that. Remember the mourners, when Lazarus died, the mourners stayed with Mary in the house, remember? When Martha came out, the mourners stayed with Mary. So, anyway, interesting. Different people. The first time we hear about Martha is in Luke 10, and that's the incident that we all know, the famous one where we see the contrast between the two women. So I'm just going to read this to you. I've got some readings, but we're mainly going to be looking at John chapter 11, where the record of Lazarus' death and resurrection is made. But this story comes from Luke, and it says, now they went on their way. As they went on their way, Jesus entered a village. Now, it doesn't locate the house that he went into in Bethany, but it seems as if it was Bethany, just from other references. And a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. So it says quite plainly that it's her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. And I think that reference is not about the... I'm getting confused. There are two records of this. Let me just continue what I've got written here. That's always the best way, isn't it? don't go wandering off, Rosemary. Okay, so she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. But the Lord answers her, Martha, Martha, you are troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion which will not be taken away from her. We all know that scripture, don't we? So, this, where it says this, a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. I don't know whether that's at that instant, that was just the first time, or whether it was a habitual thing. That maybe Jesus was often welcomed into this house. And he obviously felt at home there. And the way the people related to him was not as if it was the first interaction with him. It was as if it was part of the thing that they did. And I'm wondering, was this house the nearest thing to a home for Jesus near Jerusalem, apart from where his home in Nazareth, where the people were up north in Capernaum, where the disciples came from? This is in Jerusalem. Was this a sort of the nearest thing to a home for him, or maybe a home away from home for this man who said he had nowhere to lay his head? Now, we're not told in this scripture if the disciples who accompanied him there went inside the house, but the story continues as if it concerns only a triad, Martha, her sister Mary, and Jesus. So, this picture, you can see there, Martha standing by, with the kitchen equipment, but you can see there's a really engaged, the really strong connection between Jesus and Mary. But Martha, in this picture, Martha seems to be, she's connected as well. Obviously, she seems to be listening. So it's interesting to know, I wonder how that was set up. You know, we're not told very much. We have to imagine, don't we? And there's another picture of it, which shows it's not very clear, this one, but in this one, she doesn't seem as connected to Jesus. She seems to be maybe a bit irritated, or, you know, you can sort of see that there's a different thing going on between those two pictures. So Martha's standing, not really connected, but obviously could be interested in wishing she was doing what Mary was doing, or maybe just feeling a bit irritated that she wasn't, or that Mary was doing what she was doing. And so, of course, to Martha, it seems as if serving the meal was very important. She wanted it to be special. And she may have been very busy if the disciples were also in the house. It would have been a big preparation she was engaged in. Mary, on the other hand, chooses to sit at Jesus' feet, listening to him and his teaching, like a student learning from a rabbi. This position was usually reserved for men only. It was the men who were taught by the rabbis. And many people cheer for Mary in this reversal of traditional roles. And also, it's another example of Jesus upsetting the status quo by choosing to teach her as if equally to the men that the rabbis were, she was the disciple also. And some people empathise with Martha's resentment of Mary, leaving her to do all the work. But when she opens her mouth, everyone gets upset. Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Seems to be an implicit rebuke of Martha.
Very positive, isn't it?
So, if we just want to unpack it a bit, Martha's serving, and she asks Jesus to tell her, to help her. Jesus refuses to do what Martha wants him to do, refuses to get involved in whatever's going on between the two sisters. He points out that Mary is choosing to do what she wants to do, and implying that, and you're choosing to do what you want to do. And maybe Jesus is, rather than rebuking Mary, rising to defend Mary, just as he did later on when she was challenged about the anointing of the oil. Remember, he chose to defend what she was doing. Maybe she was that kind of a person, or maybe that was their relationship. So there's a contrast between these two sisters. Martha was a woman of action, a doer, honouring Jesus by preparing a special meal. Hospitality is her forte. Mary, a woman who chooses to honour him by listening to what he has to say to her, paying attention, seated at his feet. And just when I look about that, about Mary has chosen what is better and will not be taken away from her, it just reminded me, you know, the temptation of Jesus when he said, we shall not live by bread alone. We shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that's coming out of the mouth of God, or out of my mouth. And he said, I have food that you know not of. And in the Sermon on the Mount, he said, isn't life more than food? All those ideas coming to your mind when you hear this response. We are reminded, however, that Jesus loved them both. We're going to read about that when we read John chapter 11, when he comes to raise Lazarus, and comes to heal Lazarus initially and raise him from the dead. But before going into this chapter, I just want to remind you of the events that lead up to this resurrection story, because it's quite interesting to see where it sits in Jesus' life. I've told you all, it's John chapter 11, and some very kind people have offered to read bits when I tell you which bit I want you to read. But just before that, in John chapter 8, Jesus is saying things about himself that are really worrying the population. So John chapter 8, he says, I tell you the truth, before Abraham was born, I am. And it says they picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus hid himself, slipping away. John chapter 9, Jesus heals a man born blind. They say that he's not a blind man, he was born blind. He's not blind after a disease or an accident, but he was born blind. And so the restoration of his sight is not just a restoration of sight, but it's a creation of sight. So he's putting himself, aligning himself with God the Creator. And the next one, just prior to John 11, the Feast of Dedication, he says, I and the Father are one. Do not believe me unless I do what my Father does, but if I do it, even though you don't believe me, believe the miracles, he tells them. Believe the miracles and then you may know that the Father is in me and I in the Father. And again, it mentions there that they tried to seize him, but he escaped. So, as we can see, Jesus is ratcheting up the opposition to himself, declaring his sonship of the living God. And it seems to be a deliberate strategy he has to arouse the people to be against him. And just let me remind you that Lazarus, we're going to read the story of Lazarus, I said, it's not the first person to be raised from the dead. I often sort of thought, oh, yeah, okay. We've already heard of Lazarus, and it's one of the signs in John, the seven signs in the Gospel. No, remember there was the son of the widow at Nain. And they came up to a funeral procession, a young man had died, and his mother was widow and very distressed, and Jesus had compassion on her and went up and put his hand on the bier and said, "Young man, I say, arise." And the dead man sat up. And it says, and Jesus gave him to his mother. It's a very lovely expression. Jairus' daughter also. A man, here we have a man of some status, not a poor widow lady. A ruler in the synagogue had asked Jesus to come and heal his little girl. And when Jesus was delayed, the news came that she'd died. We all know these stories. Jesus said, no, she's sleeping. But when they arrived, they found that the people were mourning her death. And remember, this was a very private arrangement. Jesus sent them outside and had only his disciples and the parents there when he said, "Maid, arise," and she arose. And another touching little reference about him, he commanded that she be given something to eat. Mm. We see the compassion of Jesus in these stories. Anyway, this man Lazarus had been buried and was now 4 days in the grave. This is a whole new set of circumstances. So we've got a dead person and in a grave. And we're going to start reading John chapter 11. And Mitzi, thank you, Mitzi, will read verse 1 to 15.
Now a certain man was...
Would you like to stand up and just kind of speak out? So, thank you.
Now a certain man was sick, named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, "Lord, behold, he whom thou loved is sick." When Jesus heard that, he said, "This is sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus.
Okay, just note that.
Yes. Martha.
So, sorry.
No. When he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that, he said to his disciples, "Let us go into Judea again." His disciples said unto him, "Master, the Jews of late sought to stone you. You want to go there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he sees the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbles, because there is no light in him." These things said he, and after that he said unto them, "Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go, that I may awake him out of sleep." Then his disciples said, "Lord, if he sleeps, he'll be fine, he'll do well." Howbeit Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking a rest in sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him."
Just stay there for a minute, but I'm going to ask you the next one. Yes, so that particular point, the way that was made about his love for these people who live in this house in Bethany, well, we know the story so well, but I do really want to point out some various features of it. So that's why I'm having it read, and I want you now to read, continue with the reading in from just verse 17 to 22.
Then when Jesus came, he found him already being held in the tomb 4 days. And Bethany was near Jerusalem, 15 stadia away. And many of the Jews came to Martha and Mary in order to comfort them concerning their brother. Then when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Then Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, whatever you will ask of God, God will give you.
Thank you. We stopped in the middle. Thank you. We stopped in the middle of this interaction between Martha and Jesus because I find it very interesting. Okay. This is Mary running out to see Jesus, and you can see she's got a plea. If you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died.
A rebuke, isn't it?
And yes, it sounds like a rebuke, a confrontation anyway, but why didn't he come? I mean, you know, and it's a similar tone in this rebuke that she has, similar in tone to that one. Don't you care that Mary's sitting there? Tell her to help me, you know, a similar kind of communication with Jesus. Anyway, this particular cry is a cry from the heart, and it comes from a friend who knows and trusts in Jesus to understand the anguish from which the cry comes. And I find thinking about this cry of hers very, very interesting. And you have to put it in the context of this friendship relationship that they had. Now, friendship is a relationship that's intimate and trusting, if it's a true friendship. Usually they're shared values and concerns, common ideas, ideals, and worldview. This sharing allows friendships to have influence over each other. So, you know, so one person will say something and it impacts on the other person. And they have discussion and disagreement. Friends ideally hold one another accountable, and they respect and accept each other and are not afraid to confront each other if needed. Friends depend on one another for support, both emotional and material, and they trust each other to understand the love that exists between them no matter what they say. Now, it's actually, I found out it's a very, thinking about it, it's a very Jewish way of talking to God as well. If you can remember, you know, Abraham, when he argues with God about not killing the people in Sodom, you know. Oh, no, God, don't do it. No, if there's 20, no. Oh, no, God, no, if there's 10. No, don't do it, God, if there's 5, and so it goes on. And then Moses also pleaded with God when God decided to get rid of to destroy some of the Israelites who were being so unfaithful. Moses said, no, God, don't do that. I'll deal with me. And it reminded me also, I was thinking about this, remember the fiddler on the roof?
Yes.
And it was Tevye, I think that's his name.
Yeah.
And remember, he says, I wrote it down, looked it up on the Google thing, God, you've made many, many poor people. But what would have been so terrible if I'd had a small fortune? And then he sings that song, if I were a rich man. And so it's a sort of a Jewish way of speaking to God that we find a little bit foreign to us. Now, I found out that what she says, Lord, if you'd been here, etc., has been called a lament. Now, what's a lament? Well, I'll tell you to illustrate, there's many laments in the Bible, plenty in the Psalms. There's and Lamentations, of course. It's a genre of written literature.
Style.
Yeah. So this in the Psalms, there's Psalms of Thanksgiving, Psalms of Praise, and Psalms of Lament. And a very well-known lament is Psalm 22. which begins, my God, why have you forsaken me? And I'm going to have a look at this, but I want you to look at this slide while I'm looking at this psalm just to illustrate this thing about the lament. So, the lament in Hebrew literature, a lament is responsible, is a response to a critical event in a person's life. It calls into question the conviction that God protects the individual or people from calamity, chaos, and death. The characteristics of a lament are that it often accuses God of having a part in the lamenter's suffering. It has its root, however, in faith. Only a person of faith would challenge God to act in a different way. And it becomes sort of a testimony of one's trust in God. And there are four phases in the lament. So there's the address, so you talk to the person. There's a complaint, what's what I think is wrong. And then there's a petition, please do something. And then there's an affirmation. And it... that's how you, and so I'm going to get you to look at what Martha says so you can think about that. But first of all, let me just look at, I've got an illustration in Psalm 22. You know Psalm 22, it's the psalm that Jesus started on the cross, my God, my God. And he doesn't finish the psalm, but I think he knows that the this psalm that they probably know off by heart ends in an affirmation of their trust in God. And that's, I think, how he starts, why he says that. It's not about his feeling, I don't think, although it's possible that he did suffer that sense of absence, not being with him. We don't abandonment, yes. It's possible. And you might prefer that interpretation. But it also could be just a reminder. I'm reminding you of Psalm 22. Think of that. I'm on the cross. You see me on the cross, but remember, there's Psalm 22. Okay, so I'll just have a look at it. I'll just read out just a couple of verses so you'll see the pattern. So you can see the address. So it says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then, why are you so far from saving me, so far from the words of my groaning? And then there's the complaint in verse 2. Oh, my God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer, by night, and I'm not silent. And then he goes on to, where have I got this? So that's the complaint, you're not hearing me. Oh, and then verse 6 is, and then he says, I'm a worm and not a man, scorned by men and despised by the people. All who see me mock me, they insult me, shaking their heads. And then it goes on to the petition. 19, where is it? But you've got it in 11. You've got, this psalm goes pattern, 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 repeat, repeat, repeat. 11. Yeah, do not be far from me. This is the petition. For trouble is near and there's no one to help. Okay, so that's his plea. That's his petition. And verse 19. But you, O Lord, be not far off. O my strength, come quickly to help me. Deliver my life from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dogs. And then it goes into this affirmation in verse 22 where he says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the congregation, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, honor him. Revere him, all you descendants of Israel. That's the message of Jesus from the cross, which is very wonderful when you think about it. Now, I've got a little thing to do here. I thought this might be interesting. Have a look at these. This is the lament. I've written it out. So if you need to have some information on lament, it's written on the top of this. Have a look at that. I think there's one for each of you here. So, we've just gone through the writing there. I'm just wondering if you can, and so I just illustrated with Psalm 22 how that is a lament. And you can see in the square at the bottom, there's Psalm 22. You can think about that when you go home and just look at it. It's quite interesting to look at how it works out. But look at Martha's. That's what I want you to do now. Martha's lament. Okay, so I want you to look at that. I'm going to read it again to you, and I want you to write in the few, just the beginning of what is said in each one, in the address, the complaint, the petition, and the affirmation. So, have you got a pen? Anyone got a pen? Or just talk amongst yourselves and decide what you think it is, or what the first verses of that part of what she says. Okay, it's on the screen here. You don't have to look up your Bibles. It's on the screen here. So this is the conversation. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. So to just get you going, what's the address?
Lord.
Okay, that's the first thing. That's the address. And then where's the complaint?
If you'd been here,
my brother wouldn't have died. That's the complaint. And then Jesus says, well, your brother will rise again. And then she says, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And then Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And she says, everybody, yes,
I believe
you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world. So it's quite interesting to see that pattern, isn't it? So, and if you want to look at some more about the lamenting, in Lamentations, if you just go through, you look for that sort of... If you look for the address thing and then see if there's a complaint and then there's a petition, it's sort of quite interesting to see how they will envision. Any questions about that?
What was the petition that you said?
The petition? If, that, no, yes. Well, the petition is obviously implied in the thing, please, you know. I don't think there is.
Whatever you will do, you know,
whatever you
do
now,
that's the petition.
Yeah. It's right.
Say that again.
The 22. Petition is that I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. She's basically saying to him, so put the life back in him, Lord.
I know all that. The petition is implied in the
implied
request.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's such a faithful response is coming from Martha. You think he's out in the kitchen doing all the work, and Mary's the one who's the spiritual one, but Martha's full of faith, and maybe Jesus thought, well, Mary needs it more than you do or something. You know, maybe Mary's sitting back there. Mary wasn't the one who had thought.
So maybe Martha is, you know, you're sort of saying something like maybe Martha was more confident about her faith and Mary needed to be learning or hearing it.
She could have been younger and
She could have been
more fighting, thinking or something.
Or there's been spiritual growth in Martha between the time when she seemed to be worried about getting the food and then she's been told by Jesus that what Mary's doing is...
It's a thing. So she's gone, and then you see this evidence of her.
Maybe. Like an apology. Yeah. 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 You're really trusting in Jesus to knowing that. Yes, Bronwyn. It just sounds to me like there's a big power imbalance. Martha's the boss, kind of thing. And she's probably a much older woman than Lazarus.
Sounds like she was older anyway.
And Lazarus, I don't know how old, he might be an older woman. But Mary seems to be the younger one.
Yeah.
Maybe she's treating her a bit like a child. Why don't you make them help me in the kitchen, you know? And
she could be.
But she sounds like she's the doer.
Yes.
She has to get
it. Yes, she's the one who goes out, talks to him, and has this conversation with him. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Oh.
as well as thinking of what am I going to do for dinner, which is hard. We all know that.
Well, Jesus said you have many things. You were worried about many things, not just the food. She's obviously worried about running the house.
I wonder if she was also worried about Lazarus. I have this feeling. I have this thing about Lazarus needing looking after. Anyway, we'll hear about that when we talk about more about Lazarus. But anyway, I thought that was quite interesting about the lament. I wanted to share that with you.
It's very cool.
It shows she has been listening to Jesus.
She has been listening to Jesus. Not just being in the kitchen. No, no. Okay.
Perhaps she wants more listening time. She does.
So here.
Felt that too.
So when she says, "I believe," and she says, "I know," but then in that, when she says, "I know he'll rise," it's a misunderstanding of what Jesus is actually talking about, but also maybe she knows. You know, if Jesus was being with them, she might have known that he actually has raised people from the dead. She may know that already before. So how about now? What's stopping you? So we don't know. So she says, anyway, "I know he'll rise again." And then she says, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God." After this, I want to just stay with that for a minute. This is a significant statement from Mary, Martha. It's funny, I'm getting mixed up. Martha, as the identity of Jesus and God's gift of him. So she agrees, first of all, "Yes, I know, I know," and then she doesn't understand the full implication of what he is saying to her. But she accepts it, and when she says, "I believe," this is a statement of strong faith, I think. A faith not wavering, even in these circumstances, which she hasn't really got the gist of yet. So she points out that Jesus is the Christ, that is the Messiah of the Jewish expectation, the Son of God, and the one to come into the world. These three affirmations about Jesus give us as high a view of his person and purpose as we may have. And I'm thinking Martha should be remembered for this very moving declaration that she makes, instead of being remembered for Yes, look at this one. This is comparing Martha's confession of Christ with Peter's confession. So Martha says, "I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." It's a very full statement of the Jewish, the Messiahship, and the hope and fulfillment of God's promises and everything. And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And in my Bible, I don't know if it's this one, but one of them is so Peter's declaration gets a little heading in a paragraph that says Peter's confession of Jesus Christ. And Martha doesn't get anything. It's just part of the narrative. And I'm thinking, why doesn't she get a special little paragraph about her confession about the nature and the purpose of Jesus Christ? But it's interesting, the one that Peter that mentions when Peter says, Jesus says to him, you haven't discovered this yourself. This understanding has been given to you by God.
Yes.
And so then I wonder if maybe Mary and Martha has had this similar in her own personal relationship with God, and Jesus has had this revelation that, yes, I know. She says, "I know." Mm. And I think that's a really special thing to think about.
I think it's in our passage that talks about no one can say that Jesus is the Christ unless
it's been revealed.
And that's why you've got those legion or whoever calling out, Son of God or Son of David or whatever, that they're moved by the Spirit to say
that they know. That's an interesting idea, Julie. Yes, I think that is and scripture is there, and to figure out how it fits into all this is very interesting.
Do you think she's hinting, you probably said it, I probably misheard, but in verse 22, don't you think she's hinting that he could rise into the there and there?
I think she is hinting, but she's not
game enough.
Not game enough to ask. Yeah. Maybe it seems to be too much. But there's the hint, and I think she could have known of the previous resurrections from dead, and so
why can't
and maybe we can see it in her face, that you know, that picture of her face back there when she came. Come on. I don't know, very interesting. Anyway, so now at last we can get onto this story of raising Lazarus, and then it says in the scripture that I don't know if you read that out, Mitzi, but it says Martha went and called Mary. So Martha has gone to Jesus, had this conversation. Yeah. Okay, I've got to look after Mary. You know, so she goes to Mary, and there's a lovely, oh, not that one. I didn't want that one. That one. That's a lovely picture, but I sort of don't know. It sort of looks as if he's holding both of them in his arms, and it's a very lovely picture, but I don't know that I see if that main character, whose face we can see is Martha, I just don't see her a bit like that, actually. I see her... To me, that seems to be she's reconciled to the situation, but I don't know that she is. I think she's still waiting. Jesus is here now, so...
He's not just going to go away and leave us again.
What could happen? Yes, I wonder. Maybe there is that thought that, well, he's come and Lazarus is dead, and so there's so many emotions in it. I love thinking about, would it be like this or would it be like that? I wonder, because we're not told about the emotions. We're only told about what happens most of the time.
Mm. But see, when someone you love passes away as well, then somebody you really, really love as well comes to you. There's that moment of just consoling, just being with them. It's
very comforting, yes. I think it's a lovely picture of comforting, and the embrace is very gentle and very lovely. Okay, now I would like someone, who else did I ask to read? Joan. I asked you to. Joan, would you mind reading John chapter 11? Verse 28 to 37.
John 11, verse 28.
Joan, could I ask you to stand up?
Yes, sure.
Because people find it's the aircon. Yeah, it's the aircon buzzing away, which.
Yeah.
Oh, you look a bit like me walking like that. Okay, thanks, Joan.
28 to
37.
Verse 28. And after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?
Right. I think I wanted a bit more red. Where was it?
38 was.
I had written 37. Yes, I want you to read. Would you mind coming out again and read? I think I want you to read down to 44.
Okay. Jesus, once more, deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odour, for he has been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. If I knew that you always..." "I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go."
Thank you. Okay, so we have that whole story and we know it so well. But there's a lot in it. Firstly, we all remember when... So Martha again, the outspoken... "Lord, he's been dead 4 days. There's going to be a smell." And she wants to take charge and look after this whole situation and get it sorted, and not really sure, although she's pleaded and she's implied she wants something to happen. "There's going to be a smell," she says.
Practical Martha.
I know. And so it's very interesting that she, and it's Mary who doesn't say anything much. Mary is this part of the scene.
She cries.
And yes, and she's very sad. Anyway, I find that very interesting. I want to look at this verse here, though. The next one. I want to look at that. Jesus wept. Yeah. I remember when I was quite young, before you sort of make the commitment, you're thinking about what are you committing to, and somehow that verse was very important to me, to see that the compassion, which is talked about all through the scriptures. But this, Jesus wept, that's the only... This, I think, is the only... There's one about weeping over Jerusalem, I think, but this is the only one where you see a connection with people. Jesus wept. And it's always puzzled me a little bit, though, why it says it there. When it's... why didn't he weep when he was comforting them, you know, and when he saw their sorrow and their loss? Why was he weeping then, when he was just about to raise him from the dead, and he knew he would rise from the dead? Isn't that a time for
rejoice
and anticipation and excitement that this is going to happen? But no, he is weeping. And I think we see Jesus' humanity explicitly in those verbs, and that verb, and then there are other references in that passage that Joan read. He was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. And then, again, in verse 38 says, and Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. So I've been puzzled. When that verse says Jesus wept, the following statement is, well, the people thought, see how he loved him. So it was interesting that Jesus did love him, and the people knew, or maybe they took this as a sign as how much he loved him. I don't know. But as I said, I have a problem that he's weeping then. Some people say it's more like some kind of emotional disturbance he was feeling, and sort of angry with the people around for not understanding him or anything. It's a conjecture, but it doesn't seem to ring true for me. I think it's, and I'd love to hear your ideas about it. I think it was because all of a sudden Jesus came, was confronted with the idea that he was going to raise this man who he loved from the dead, And what was going to happen to him then? What was Lazarus going to do then? He was going to have to die again. He was going to have to die a second time. And I think Jesus wept at the thought of the one that he loved having to go through it all again. It's just an idea. I know some people have seen that. And
I'll say what I think, Grace, because we've talked about it. I just think it's pure and simple love for the people around him. Empathy, that's what I think it is. Just because as much as he loved them, he hadn't quite got the message across. And when you're faced with a dead person that you love, it's really hard to think immediately of the kingdom. And I just think he loved them. I think it's as simple as that. That's my opinion of it. Now, I see your point, but I think it's a bit, it's just taking it, it's a bit remote, I think, to try and read that into it when it's very immediate.
I actually would agree with Rosemary. I think the time for weeping would have been when he was told. He knew that Lazarus was dead at least 4 days before. And he knew that Lazarus was dead. That would have been when you would have wept. But what was he... I mean, if you were raised from the dead, what would you think?
What's the emotion attached to it?
But what would you think? That you're raised from the dead, you'd think, the kingdom is here. Wow. Sorry.
Not for Lazarus.
What were the true friends?
I know.
I think the trust that he had in Lazarus. And it says that the Jews sought him to kill him, Lazarus, from that point on.
Yeah.
A beautiful point. Yeah. But I also think it can be alongside yours as well. It could be multiple.
Yes, multiple means, of course.
And also, he's come up to a grave and his friend has been in there 4 days. And, you know, he had caused a lot more trouble to everybody than if he had been there earlier. He knew it was for the glory of God. But also, when I was just reading that and they said it was a grave with a stone, with a, in the cave with stone, all I could think of was Jesus. Jesus. Not long after that. I don't know how long after, not long after that. I think it was the next week. It was the next week, wasn't it? Oh, well, that's pretty close. That he was going to be in that same situation.
But he knew he was going to rise to new life.
But he knew
Lazarus was going to rise to...
And he also knew that the crying that went on about Lazarus, all of that was going to go on about him. I think there's overwhelming emotions coming up.
What about the others who'd been raised from the dead? There were two children, one there.
The young man,
and the one you
mentioned.
Yeah,
they were raised in persecution like Lazarus was going to be.
That's right.
But there's been... People might have tried to... wash away those and say, oh, well, it wasn't quite dead.
This one, there's no...
This one's really dead. Lazarus, there is no
doubt. Argument, no.
Because he's been in a tomb for 4 days. Dead.
He's 4 days in the tomb and Jesus was 3. So there's no confusing the two. He was the Christ. He is raised from the dead.
They had this belief, apparently at the time, that there was an idea, amongst some, I don't know about most of these people, that the spirit hangs around for 3 days.
Oh, yes.
And this was the fourth, so definitely, no hope.
Yeah,
so interesting.
It's so human to weep, though, isn't it? If I see somebody even on TV weeping about something distressing, I start crying myself. So when you saw the others weeping and Mary weeping, it's very human, isn't it?
Yes,
very human. So it's a lovely aspect of weeping.
Verse 38 adds something to it. And this particular version says that Jesus groaning in himself. So
deep emotion.
He is very disturbed. Because he was...
Mine says deeply moved. Has anyone got it? I love that message, Barbara. Anyone got that?
No.
Mine actually says
I read in some of the commentaries that there was an anger, but I think I think the main idea in that is a strong emotion.
I think emotion. I have got the message. I'll put it out.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But there was another verse there, Rosemary, that said to, he said to Martha, didn't I tell you this was in, just before all of that? Mm. Said, didn't I say something, didn't I tell you this was for
the No, they said that to the disciples.
Yes.
They said that to the disciples.
Was that saying it to the disciples then?
Because,
yeah, actually in the,
In the message it does say anger. Then Jesus, the anger again welling up within him, arrived at the tomb.
I read that also, and the commentators say that there's an idea of anger in there. I'm wondering, it fits with my idea about Jesus, that he's actually thinking, I have to do this. I know I have to do this, but I'm anguished because I love this man and he has to suffer again.
Yeah.
I think there's some kind of anguish. I don't know where that word, now I don't know about the word anguish. You know, angry, anguish.
No.
You think they're not linked?
No, not
quite.
Sorry,
Dee?
No. Look why he says, I can see why they think he might be angry, because he said, then the Jews said, see how he loved him. And some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept him from dying? Then Jesus is anguished or angry or whatever.
Maybe he was
angry about that.
That's right.
That was after he cried, though.
Okay.
Then in the next bit it says he was,
Yeah, right.
He's come to
anger. I don't think anguish and angry have got a common root.
No. Somebody you love dies. I mean, I even get sort of angry about the fact that you died. You know, because I'm left alone.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So anger is a part of grief.
It is.
Oh, definitely. Definitely part of grief, yes.
Not just because I'm alone.
Yes.
I think he would have been angry at what Lazarus suffered. I think he's angry at mortality and sin and death.
Mm.
Because after all, he's going to have to be pegged to a cross for mortality and sin and death. But, yeah, I don't think you can separate it all out. It's all there like a big cloud.
Very complex, isn't it? And we are very complex people, like him. And he's probably the most complex of all, knowing his mission to the world and what he could accomplish and what he chose to accomplish for us.
It makes you think of him weeping over Jerusalem because people wouldn't believe him, doesn't it? And I think he'd be angry that people there were people there still not believing that he was the Messiah and that he could raise this person.
Mm. This is a very public resurrection.
It's not like when you went into a room to raise the little girl.
This is a very
bring the body out and
The other thing is, I always used to think that this particular miracle, well, like everything, it to some extent it's set up. Like it was in a stage, and Jesus didn't come, so there was all that. He saw that they'd suffered because he hadn't come straight away. Mm. So Lazarus had to die. And then the whole thing is in that he thinks all this suffering, I mean, that's what the world has to go through.
Mm.
And that overwhelms him at that time.
Yes,
and it's empathy.
As you say, he knew, he knew that this is the way it had to be. He knew he had to do this. He knew he had to not go and come then.
Yeah.
He had to wait and he had to do it. And now, yes, and that. The suffering that all to show, to show this truth about his ability to...
But then if he had to do all that waiting and all that, why did he get so angry? I mean, it doesn't really make sense, I don't think. He waited for 4 days before he went. And then when he does do it all, he's angry.
Well, I don't think it's
anguish.
I don't think it's
anguish. Yes,
anguish is
anguish.
Not anger. No, I think there's an anger, maybe about his having to do this. He had to cause all this suffering.
It's distressing.
Yes, he had to. This whole scenario caused a lot of suffering
for a lot of people
to preach his truth that he has to preach. And yes, so
I think
you can't say all that in a nutshell, just to shock your brain. I mean, I can't say, you know, I think all of this and I've done all of that because just as anguished that they don't understand.
Maybe he could be angry because he knew that even though he did these miracles and these people believed, there were still some people that did not believe and were going to kill him. So it must have been so frustrating that he could do these miracles, but that just didn't affect some of those people at all. They were just so
unhappy. They didn't see it.
They couldn't see it.
I would say that there were some people standing by looking for more evidence. Mm.
Yes, this is not enough.
Anyway, to summarise, we can say there was a great sadness and great emotional impact on Jesus at this time. And while these people were watching this miracle happen, Jesus was disturbed greatly and weeping while he called Lazarus out of the grave.
It's the really human side of the Son of God.
Human side, yes, Martha, the Son of God. We see it very strongly in this miracle that he is doing. Okay, the next time we meet Martha, and it's the last time she's mentioned in the scripture, Mark's going to read, it's in John 12, it's just the following chapter. John chapter 12, Marg, would you read verse 1 to 11?
John chapter 12. Hold on, sorry. 1 to 11.
Yep. Loudly. Do you want to come out?
Oh, yes. Then Jesus, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, which had been dead, whom he raised from the dead. There they made him a supper, and Martha served. But Lazarus was one of them that sat at the table with him. Then took Mary a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly, and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the odour of the ointment. Then said one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. Then said Jesus, let her alone. Against the day of my burying has she kept this. For the poor always you have with you, but me you have not always. Much people of the Jews therefore knew that he was there, and they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might see Lazarus also, whom he had raised from the dead. The chief priests consulted that they might put Lazarus also to death. Because that by reason of him many of the Jews went away and believed on Jesus. On the next day, much people that were come to the feast, when they heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem, took branches of palm trees and they were forced to meet him.
I know, it's a lovely story. Okay, everyone go home and read that. That's
it's
another story.
Gorgeous. Yes.
Well read.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. So this is interesting. This house again. Martha serving again. But Lazarus also is one of the honoured guests at the table with Jesus. And but this story, as you saw, is more about Mary's devotion. There's just a reference to Martha in that one. Mary's devotion and her very lovely tribute in honour of Jesus' imminent death. It's very, very beautiful. And you note here Jesus saying, let her alone. He understands Mary's heart and let her alone, and she's doing it for me, and I know, and I'm letting you know that I know that she's doing it for my death.
So that's the second letter alone.
Yes, the second letter alone. I think maybe Mary was that type of person. Maybe that relationship with Jesus, got to protect this Mary, you know. Martha, I can just deal with her.
Yeah.
And Mary, I do have to look out for Mary. And Mary also is this perceptive one. So you've got to remember, Martha didn't do this.
Didn't
bring the ointment and do that. It was Mary who did that. And Martha was this completely different type of person. Interesting. I wonder if that's true. That missed my eye. Yeah. Margaret's pointing out the fact that it says in that scripture, they made him suffer. Supper. Where is it?
Verse 2.
Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honour. Martha served. Well, it doesn't say that in my Bible, so there you go. It says Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining. And then Mary took
the ointment.
And yes, so there's that reference. And so that's very interesting. If this, she had the ointment, which was worth a year's of wages, so there was obviously some wealth there in that household. And at the same time, there were the poor people nearby. And
so that must have been her ointment, do you think?
I think so.
Because, I mean, if it was the family's ointment,
Martha would have had something to say.
you would think possibly that it was her. And I thought they might not have been that wealthy until that point of time.
Mm.
But because why don't they have servants doing all of this
They
work?
Could have had servants. There's nothing saying that they didn't have servants.
Yes.
She could have been in charge of six helpers in the kitchen, for all we know.
Yes.
So we don't know. Okay, so the reference to the poor is here again, and as I told you, there may have been a refuge for the poor. In fact, the name Bethany means poor house, or house of misery. But Jesus did not experience poverty there.
No.
Instead, he experienced warmth and love and hospitality and understanding from dear friends. He spent a lot of time there during the last weeks of his earthly ministry. He began his ride into Jerusalem from there, which Margaret just started to read. From Bethany, he rode into Jerusalem on the ass. He stayed there the following week and may have spent the last few days before his crucifixion in Martha's home. And according to Luke's Gospel, it's said that Jesus ascended into heaven from a place near Bethany. So someone suggested that I read a chapter in Who Moved the Stone? You know that old, really old book by Frank Morrison? Because there was a chapter about the two sisters there. Well, I did read it. The words that he used are very lovely, and I thought I would repeat them to you. He said, the two sisters were devoted heart and soul to Jesus. Their restful home was one of the few luxuries he ever allowed himself. It was probably from their house that he stepped out on the last morning he was to see as a free man. And Morrison then goes on to wonder where they were, Mary and Martha, and that during Jesus' trial and crucifixion. And even the resurrection. They're not mentioned again. And he postulates that there was a fear of arrest among Jesus' followers. And also that mention in that reading that Mark did that they came to see Lazarus and then they were afraid. They made plans to kill Lazarus as well. For on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and putting their faith in him. So I wonder if there was some kind of protection of Lazarus that took up the attention of Mary. Who knows? It's just an idea, a conjecture. Fear for the life of this brother, this precious brother, who was the person that Jesus loved. Remember, it starts off, Jesus loved him. And they all apparently loved him. And they were fearful of his life. Okay, to conclude, I just want to remind you that Mary and Martha were both women of great faith and spiritual perception and devotion. And Jesus was drawn to them, it seems, like as if he found comfort in their company. And women like them are needed today, women of insight and devotion to Jesus, spending time in his company and honouring him and serving him and learning of him. And if we're like that, then maybe he will call us his friends.